And welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm a homeschool father of five, raising our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado, as we have for the last, 15, 18 years, and still working to bring a biblical worldview to bear in every area of life. We do it in our homeschool curriculum, and we transfer some of these ideas to our radio program from time to time. And what we find is the Word of God has something to say about every single area of life. And I know that the Word has been largely derelevantized by the church and by the pastors and by the preaching ever since the law of God was pretty much ignored. As it turns out, if you gut the Word of God of his ethical standards or his law, then you actually have very little to say about anything. You can't define sin anymore. You have no idea why Jesus died on the cross, no idea why the atonement, no idea how to live life in accord with God's will and live the life of sanctification and disciple the nations by teaching them to observe whatsoever Jesus has commanded. The word is commanded, which ties in the idea of law and ethical codes. Okay, so we're doing that. That's what we do on this program. And for some of you, this is sort of new. You're like, whoa, I didn't realize that the Bible has so much to say about everything. Okay, well, great article here in World Magazine, Dave, that I wanted to tie into this edition of the program. And World Magazine has got some good things. They really try to bring some measure of a biblical worldview to bear here and there. Now, here's an article, a news article. This was in their February 23rd edition of World Magazine. And this is Edward Lee Pitts talking about what's going on in Washington, D.C. Now, Dave, here's the question. Who was the last president to reduce the national debt year to year? Now, I already told you the answer.
You did. It would be cheating for me to give you
an
answer.
Yeah, it would be. It would be. But a lot of people would say, oh, that's easy, Ronald Reagan.
Nope. Some people would say Bill Clinton.
Yeah, because you had the contract with America on the part of the Republicans, and it didn't really do anything to reduce the debt. But the last president to reduce the federal debt in America, Dwight D. Eisenhower, almost 60 years ago. 60 years is a long time. That's older than me. That's older than you.
Yeah.
That's a different generation. All right, now, here's a question that comes to my mind. Okay, a nation that's been successively in more debt for the last 60 years and never reduced the debt in 60 years, what happens to that nation? Dave, how many years do you keep going into more and more and more debt and you live on debt to the point where you've never reduced it? How many years until you're done? Till it's over. Pencil's done. Test is over. How many years do you go? I don't know. I have no idea. Anyway, here's what the article says. Today's lawmakers aren't like Ike. Instead, they squabble and fret over slicing $85 billion when 2013 may mark the fifth consecutive year of trillion-dollar annual deficits. Now, there's a line. I didn't realize that, Dave. 5 years. Over $1 trillion every year in deficits. So that adds what, like $6 trillion in just 5 years? That's unbelievable. Okay, so and they're squabbling over this $85 billion. You know, defense gets $32 billion. Domestic spending gets $44 billion, and it's just going back and forth. And they're arguing and throwing things at each other. But Dave, isn't the big elephant in the room the elephant in the room? I mean, $1.3 trillion is a lot of money. That's what I'm hearing for 2013. We're looking at a $1.3 trillion deficit, and they're arguing over $85 billion. That's like 4% or 6% or whatever.
Right. We need to explain to our listeners who attended public schools that $1 trillion is $1,000 billion.
That's a lot of billions.
So when you're talking about 83, you're talking about, not a huge percentage of a budget.
Okay, Dave, anyway, this guy goes on and on and on, says they're fighting over it, how much domestic, how much defense, on and on and on. At the end of the article, World Magazine, again, Eisenhower is saying, we got to cut this budget. We got to cut the debt, not the deficit, cut the debt. And that's something that hasn't been done for 60 years, friends, 60 years. Okay, that's how long we've been living with the existentialistic lifestyle. He ends the article with quotes from Ike Eisenhower 60 years ago. This is Eisenhower, Dwight D. Eisenhower, 60 years. I know it's been a long time since this kind of sense has been spoken in the United States of America because we've been living the wrong worldview a long, long time. Here's what Eisenhower said some 60 years ago. We must avoid the impulse to live only for today. Yeah. We must avoid the impulse to live only for today, he said in a speech that lawmakers debating the fate of the sequester should consider. Plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow, we cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage. And listen, friends, we can't spend our kids and our grandkids into debt indefinitely. We have got to avoid the impulse to live only for today. I'm sorry, friends, but existentialism is in our bloodstream in America. Like a president of the United States saying this could stem the flow of 60 years of the entire zeitgeist of America moving towards who cares about the kids. Let's kill 80 million of them in the womb, and let's spend our kids and grandkids into debt because we are existentialists. We are Sartorian existentialists to the core, and hell is everybody else, and we are going to drive our grandkids into the ground. Who cares about future civilizations? Friends, this is what runs in our bloodstream because we are existentialistic as a nation. This is who we are. This is who the schools are. This is what the political framework is. And Dave, there is no way that a speech from Dwight D. Eisenhower is ever going to displace the existentialistic philosophy that runs in the bloodstream of almost every single American.
Well, let's look at America at the time of Dwight D. Eisenhower. We were about ready to engage in the baby boom, the largest expansion of population that this nation ever saw, at least by the birth canal, not by people moving into the country. But we had families. We had the growth of suburbia in the middle class. This was Dwight D. Eisenhower's America. The America we have now is people are not having families. They're getting divorced. They're not going to build their own home. They're building a little mansion and populating it with TV sets. People are killing the children in the womb rather than raising them. We're spending more money per child who's alive, and yet we're spending less time with every child that's alive. America has changed. We've gone from Leave It to Beaver to MTV. It has become about the individual, and rather than the family unit, it has become about your particular stock portfolio rather than your children's inheritance.
And one of the things they're forgetting is that the worker-to-retiree ratio is falling, is dropping like a rock. It's going to be a tenth of what it was in 1950 in another 20, 30 years from now. And forget about this nation having anything of a good economic future, friends. Again, our worker-to-retiree ratio is imploding big time because birth rates have been imploding since 1960. Margaret Sanger's birth control pill and the abortion holocaust that came in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. Okay, friends, well, that's the future of America. America, no hope for America as a nation. No hope for America's social situation, economic situation. It's going to be some hope for some islands of freedom here and there where people catch our radio broadcast, get a little different worldview, and begin to establish different values in their families and hopefully reestablish themselves in the biblical faith. There'll be some hope here and there, little islands of freedom here and there throughout the United States and the developed nations, 80 of which are birth imploding right now. In just a moment, friends, another article. This one comes from the Wall Street Journal, and it is shocking. The worst depression since the Great Depression. It's happening right now. Be back in just a minute. This is Kevin Swanson of the program, It's Generations.
Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio Program is a ministry of generations with vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org.
Back on the Generations Radio broadcast, Kevin Swanson here, quoting from Dwight D. Eisenhower in World Magazine. And friends, he was saying that we can't live as existentialists. We must avoid the impulse to live only for today. We cannot plunder the precious resources of tomorrow. We can't mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage. Hello? That's exactly what's going on. The last 60 years has been nothing but debt spending. And, of course, it went exponential over the last 10 years. It was very difficult for a man like him to avoid the existentialistic philosophy that was overwhelming America, largely through the literary giants like Ernest Hemingway, John Steinbeck, and, of course, the entire cultural wave that came through media, etc. And at this point, friends, existentialism is the rule of the day, and one politician is not going to in any way stem that tide. No way, no way, no way. Yet Dwight Eisenhower came from a different generation, Dave. He came from a different generation. I mean, you know, there was still something in America that involved some self-sacrifice. My guess is the man was probably born in the 19th century or just at the turn of the 20th century, and he still had something of the old ways that you give up your lives for others, you build your future for your children and grandchildren by sacrifice, and that's the only way you're going to sustain civilizations. And that, my friends, was jettisoned, was gone by the 1960s and 70s.
Well, Kevin, that generation fought a war, and many of them died for the preservation of their family. They were really facing the clash of two different worldviews. One was fascism, and the other was free market enterprise. Now, unfortunately, free market enterprise won the battle, but perhaps hasn't won the war. There was still a modicum of Christianity, a heritage, capital that was left over, a work ethic that was still alive and operating in the 50s. Unfortunately, it was also the seeds of the 60s were already sprouting below the surface, and we get to where we are today. Today, men are not, by and large, sacrificing their lives for their country and for their family and for their wives.
And granted, there are exceptions, but we're just looking at the zeitgeist. We're looking at the big picture here, friends. There are exceptions. There are those who do sacrifice, and we call those islands of freedom, wherever there are families, fathers who will lay down their lives for their future children and leave an inheritance for their children's children. There's some of that going on, and that's why we talk about family economics all the time on this program, and we sponsor two family economics conferences this year, one in St. Louis, Missouri, the other in Washington State. And for more information on family economics and bringing and building a true blue, strong economic structure for your children and grandchildren, you're going to have to check out our site, familyeconomics.com. Well, speaking of the breakdown of economies, and again, friends, I'm saying it's not going a good direction. And if you think that the birth implosion is going on right now and the 80 million baby boomers retiring over the next 18 years and the borderline Social Security program that's going downhill and turning and going bankrupt within the next 15, 20 years is going to save our civilization, it ain't going to do that. It's just not going to happen. The coup de grace to the whole thing ultimately is the worker retiree ratio. Just keep that in mind. The coup de grace to the economic disaster that is on our hands right now is the worker retiree ratio. That's the issue. And when that worker retiree ratio is a tenth of what it was back in the 1950s, that is, it's sinking like a rock. You have far, far less workers to every retiree than you did some 50, 60 years ago in the 1950s. And that thing's going to bottom out by the year 2050, 2060. And you think that is going to salvage our economy? It ain't, my friends. Here's Forbes magazine talking about the worst 5 years since the Great Depression. This guy says, in February 2009, I wrote for the Wall Street Journal an article called Reaganomics versus Obamanomics. The article explained that the emerging Obamanomics was pursuing exactly the opposite of every policy of the enormously successful Reaganomics, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the results are in. And under President Obama, the American people have now suffered the worst 5 years since the Great Depression, as first explained by Steve McCann of The American Thinker on January 25th. McCann writes, instead, what America got by year five was fewer jobs than before. Even though the employment age population has increased by nearly 12 million since January 2008, there are now 3 million fewer Americans working, with employment declining from 146.3 million in January 2008 to 143.3 million in December 2012. That is, there are less people working today than there were in 2008. says that's why last month, 61 months after the recession began, unemployment was still rising even while record numbers continued to drop out of the workforce. The unemployment rate for blacks was still well into the double digits at 13.8%. For Hispanics, still nearly double digits as 90.7% for teenagers, continued depression at 23.4%. For black teenagers, a genocidal 37.8%. Obama constantly proclaims himself the champion of the middle class, but that is just more Saul Alinsky's strategy. Enact socialism while proclaiming you are doing it for the middle class, which is actually getting taken. During the last 5 years, real median household income has declined nearly 9% from $54,000 at the end of 2007 to $50,000 at the beginning of 2012. That was the most precipitous plunge on record. So Americans, more unemployment over the last 4 to 5 years than any time since the Great Depression. And on top of that, you have a median income for the average person who happens to be unemployed right now falling over the last 4 years somewhat substantially. Yet, while the economy has not been growing, government spending has been booming. Federal spending has increased by 41% over the last 5 years, with total government spending at all levels increasing by nearly 27% to an all-time high of $6.2 trillion. Friends, that's Forbes magazine, the worst 5 years since the Great Depression. They've kind of shocked me. I thought we were in a recovery. Guess it's not much of a recovery. He's saying it's the worst 5 years since the Great Depression. And from what I can tell, things aren't looking good for 2013 and 2014.
No, they're not. In fact, the job numbers are far worse than the statistics would show. There are several anomalies in the statistics and the way they're gathered, but here's a couple. One is that there's been an artificial increase in the number of government jobs. And government jobs don't produce anything in the economy, so those people get off the rolls.
You would think that if they had increased government spending by 41% over the last 5 years, that you would have gotten, you know, like five more jobs. You know, like five jobs, you know, five or ten. But instead, according to this, employment has dropped by 3 million jobs. In other words, 3 million less Americans working today than were 5 years ago, even after increasing government spending by 41%. Well, I mean, where's the money going?
Well, Kevin, the government is one of the least efficient spenders of money. So if you collect $100,000 from businesses that produce things, that's going to create a $20,000 government job. By the time everybody gets their little cut and all the administrators happen, get their piece, you get very little out of it, in other words. So government's very inefficient.
You get some government jobs out of it.
You are getting government jobs.
Something out of it.
You are getting government jobs.
So it must be that you're losing private enterprise jobs. It must be those things falling off the cliff.
Exactly.
While all these jobs are turning over to government, and government, of course, doesn't do anything productive. We know that. They just move stacks of paper from one stack to the next and regulate all the people who are trying to actually get something done in society.
Right. Well, the teachers' unions and the other government unions are doing pretty well, actually. The federal government unions. The private enterprise is not doing well. The other thing that that number doesn't take into account is the people who have stopped looking for work because they're depressed and discouraged. And it doesn't count those who used to have a $50,000 a year job, now have a $20,000 a year job, flipping burgers. It doesn't count what we call the underemployed, those people who are employed well below some former status that they had. So when you throw all that together and you make a better picture of the economy, the unemployment is really a lot closer to 25%.
People sometimes want to know what it looks like when a civilization or an empire collapses. This is what it looks like, friends. I mean, you know, take your children on a field trip. Have them read Forbes magazine. You know, if you want to know how Rome fell, this is how it goes. I mean, we are sitting effectively in Rome in AD 457 or 475. I don't know exactly when we're sitting in Rome, but somewhere around 475 AD. And this is what it looked like, friends.
Is that Nero fiddling?
That's, I don't know, that was a little earlier on. But this is the end of it. This is the way it looks towards the end. Socialism itself is very destructive, Dave. I mean, of course, it's based on cheating and stealing, redistributing wealth. And it's really, really unfair. And then eventually you get, you know, as many people on the dole as possible. And once you get 51% or 65% to getting the government check or on the dole, you're in total control. Now you have all the power it takes to destroy all free enterprise and a productive society. And they were able to do that. And Dave, I don't know if the socialists, the Democrats, and the socialist Republicans are actually willfully destroying our society. Some may not be. My guess is some of them are epistemologically self-conscious in what they're doing. They know what they're doing. And they're going to destroy America. And they're going to destroy productivity. They're going to destroy society. And they're going to be happy to do it. as long as they retain a little wealth for themselves, I guess. But I mean, I'm guessing there's some people out there that are malicious in their intent, and they intend to do that. But the rest of them have been trained carefully in the schools to employ socialism and thereby destroy an entire empire and a civilization. So socialism itself, not healthy, and we are in the worst 5 years since the Great Depression now, according to Forbes magazine. And friends, I tell you, what do we do? Well, here is an article that came out of PBS.org. And Dave, I think it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting because, again, stop clock can be correct twice a day. And I would put that in this department. It's called the youth unemployment crisis, a fix that works and pays for itself. They quote an economist, Bob Lehman, who proposes a solution to the youth unemployment crisis in America. And Lehman argues the quickest way to getting unemployed kids off the street and into the payroll is through work apprenticeships, which is what we've been saying for a long time. And they're working off of this huge problem that teenagers are unemployed. Black teenagers are genocidal 37.8%, is what Forbes magazine said. And what they're saying is that academics are probably not going to prepare your average young American for the macroeconomy. And here's the quote. So let's increase public investment in apprenticeships. It will modestly reduce the enormous gaps in funding for the college-bound versus funding for young people who prefer work-based learning by doing alternatives along with classroom instruction. It will widen opportunities for rewarding careers, increase economic mobility, and increase engagement of young people who drift aimlessly through the formal education system. It will give more young people pride in what they do, both in mastering an occupation and in their confidence that they have learned how to learn. It's past time that we recognize an academic-only strategy is ill-suited for a diverse population for the diverse needs in the labor market. Building a robust apprenticeship system can play a far more constructive role in expanding the middle class than maintaining a pure school-based strategy and focusing on raising the U.S. ranking in the percent of young people who graduate from college. I guess, Dave, we've been saying this for the last 5 years. I just wish that Christian homeschoolers would come to agree with me and PBS.org on this one, that it may be a better idea to use mentorships and apprenticeships than insisting that their children take on $50,000 in college debt and do the college thing without any mentorships. It's just nuts. People want to continue that. I think they're going to yield the results.
But typical of PBS, they got part of it right, but they put enough poison in the mix to destroy the whole thing. It cannot be a government-controlled program. It can't be a centralized program, because once the government gets involved, the government regulates it, the government will destroy it. That's just a fact of life. Right. It's an economic fact. Look, we have systemic problems. We have systemic problems with how we do our currency. We have problems with how we regulate our economy. But all of these they grow out of a character problem. And the character problem is this. We don't believe that God knew what he was saying when he said, go and take some dominion. But go occupy this earth and make some glory for me, and I will give to you everything you need. We didn't believe him. We actually got lazy. And we said, you know, I know that the idea of a free lunch isn't really economically feasible, but this time a free lunch might happen. Let's just go ahead and print some more money. Let's forget about backing it with anything. Let's create a fiat currency, because then we can create wealth without work. And we can create jobs without training. And we can create opportunity without people taking dominion. And we start talking about the problem of people not spending enough. Well, people aren't making enough. Well, people aren't doing this enough. And we end up with this monstrous system of control with nothing to control.
Yeah.
Reminds me of the line that there was plenty of money, but nothing that money can buy. And that was from Kipling.
Yeah.
And this is what happens right before the currency collapses.
Yeah.
There was plenty of money, but nothing that money could buy.
And maybe the fundamental problem is people keep looking to the government to solve their problems for them. And government says, okay, we'll do it. More debt. We'll do it with more debt. And we'll do it with more debt. And people keep looking for government for more of the salvation. And so the government keeps spending because the government has been commissioned to do that by their voters, who vote 54% Democrat. And we all know what that means. That means more socialism and more government solutions for everything. Well, I'm here to tell you, friends, it's time to get off of the government plantation. It's time to get onto the islands of freedom and build your own islands of freedom. That's one of the first things that most of us ever did in the 1990s. And the 2000s and on into the 2010s, is we pulled out of the public schools. We said, okay, first thing we're going to do is we don't need the government to educate our children. That's the first thing that many of us did. We said, we'll be free by establishing our own island of freedom and taking responsibility for the education of our children. So there are people doing that. There are people who are saying, hey, we're not going to need government Obamacare to take care of us, womb to tomb, and we don't need Obamacare to be sure they euthanize us by the time we're 72 years old because there's not enough money to take care of us from then on out. No, we're establishing relationships with our own families, and we are going to do the best we can to get into a Samaritan medical program like Samaritan MediShare or one of those programs that that provide for an option outside of the Obamacare system. As I said before, as we said many times in this program, that the Christian Medical Sharing Ministries were exempted from the Obamacare bill. And because of that, there are tens of thousands of families that are exiting the system, and they're moving on to the island of freedom. And I think the same thing can be done, Dave, in the area of college, university. We don't have to go to a publicly funded education system anymore. And again, most Christian kids, I think, probably wind up in one of the publicly funded community colleges or universities. And I think what we need to do is, I'm not condemning people for, again, being part of these systems. I'm saying we have to create alternative approaches. We have to.
Well, Kevin,
we have to cut off this system that is so linked to the government and the fascist-run corporations. And we have to create our own mentorships. Again, as you said, not funded by the government, but voluntarily run by our own little operations. And, you know, we've been doing that ourselves here, Dave, in the Shepherd Center and with the Generations broadcast for the last 7 years.
Well, we make it clear we're not anti-education. What we are is pro-discipleship. In other words,
an anti-statist education. We want the state out of the university, community college, and public school business.
And more importantly, we want an education in the fear of the Lord. We want people, we want men taking dominion for the glory of God. There's a lot in that statement. I want them taking dominion for the glory of God, not just a paycheck, not just knowing how to fill out the forms for food stamps, but they're taking some area, and it doesn't matter whether they're a podiatrist or a plumber, taking some area and taking dominion for the glory of the Lord and doing it in the fear of God. That's how you rebuild an economy. And I got a feeling that this next generation is going to have a lot of rebuilding to do because this thing's coming down.
Now, we want to be careful not to say everybody has to do all this at the same time. Okay, I'm not trying to bind burdens too heavy for people to bear. I'm just saying, friends, the Titanic isn't doing very well. And you better be involved in working on the life raft manufacturing centers. You better start working on opting yourself and your families out of the state education systems, the state universities, the state community colleges. Opt yourself out of these things. Work on mentorships. Find ways to do College Plus at home and pay for it yourself. And also opt yourself out of the socialist medical systems. And you better do it now because as we approach the year 2020, as the government gains more and more control over that mandated $20,000 or $24,000 per family insurance premium or whatever it's going to be. I've seen numbers as high as $28,000 per family of five or six. If you want to opt yourself out of that thing and you want to do it because you want control as well as funding of your own family's medical situation, then you're going to have to get involved in something like a Christian medical sharing opportunity. And I recommend people look into SamaritanMinistries.org in that light. And you better check it out before 2014 when Obamacare and all its pro-abortion, pro-abortifacient, pro-euthanasia programs are put in place. Okay, so check out some of these islands of freedom. Slowly wean yourself off of these systems. Friends, you've got to do it. You think the system's going to survive? You think that that's going to be hunky-dory and everything's going to be fine when America is 92% on a socialist government and hoping somehow there'll be enough medical care for the 80 million retiring baby boomers by 2040. I'm sorry, but you're just going to have to start working on Plan B and start working on it right now. So that's why we talk about these things on this program. There's a lot of hope. We actually believe that there are options. There are solutions. There are approaches that are better than the socialist redistribution of the wealth routine recommended by Karl Marx and his cronies. Okay, my friends, you can interact with the radio program called Generations by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can grab a copy of my book, The Second Mayflower, which outlines an agenda for the future for our children and grandchildren. Again, The Second Mayflower at my website, kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.